Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Focus on Albany. My guest today is going to be Morgan Cadmey, and Morgan will be on in just a minute, and we will be discussing the verdict in the Sheldon Silver trial. It seems as if, you know, this is going to change Albany, and Morgan will be explaining what he thinks in what ways it will be changing. So he will be on in just a minute. I'm waiting for him to pick up the phone right now. So what all of you who heard
Hi. The
interview. Hi, Morgan. We're on the air, and we'll be discussing the Sheldon Silver's verdict. First of all, what was your reaction when you heard the news?
Are you addressing me? I didn't know. Sorry, because I jumped on late. I didn't know if we had another person.
That's
on.
That's fine. We're on. Just you and I.
I was surprised, but, you know, it's really difficult for anyone to gauge how a trial is going without being in the courtroom every day. A number of courtroom reporters that I know, you know, often describe that the experience of reading it about it, you know, on a day-to-day basis is often so disparate from what they actually observe. So, you know, I had heard from some folks that it seemed like, you know, the government's case might not be as strong as, you know, as necessary to obtain a conviction. And also that, you know, when I read the indictment, it didn't seem like a slam dunk to me the way that it did with Dean Skelos and his son. I was pleasantly surprised, because I think that this is an important you step forward in cleaning up Albany, and I think that it really would have undermined, you know, U.S. Attorney Barrera's authority and his strength in prosecuting corruption, and that this will drive him forward and hopefully continue the tremendous work that he has done.
So it seems as though, from what I read and what I hear, that Skelos's case is more predictable in its outcome. Skelos is convicted. What do you think this will mean for the U.S. attorney?
I mean, you know, I had just written on Twitter the other day about how I believe that New York really owes a debt of gratitude to Preet Bharara for really stepping forward, becoming the sheriff of Albany that the capital so desperately needs. I don't know what his future is. I mean, certainly he could have a very great future in an elected office, but he has given no indication that that is the direction that he wants to go. And I can't possibly speculate. You know, he is an exceptional person, and I think, you know, his future is limitless. But I hope that, you know, he, and I believe that it precisely is what he's doing, is keeping his head down and making sure that his work is finished. And unfortunately, the cesspool in Albany is such that it seems like no one person could ever fully clean it up. It is like it's a Herculean labor. But, you know, as hopefully he can get as much done as possible before his term is over.
Nobody has a crystal ball, and nobody could see into the future, and nobody really knows what the actions of other people are going to be. But from your perspective, how do you think the verdict against Silver and the possible verdict against the Skelos father and son, how do you think that will make Albany different?
You know, I don't know. I mean, that, as you said, you know, that remains to be seen. I'm happy that the there seems to be a new wind at the back of good government advocates like myself and all the other extraordinary good government, not that I'm extraordinary, but all the extraordinary good government advocates that we have in Albany who have been pushing for, you know, substantive change for so long. I have been dispirited by what I've heard so far with the majority leader Flanagan saying that he, that he's against a full-time legislature, which I think is a necessary step forward. We have to eliminate outside income. It's just, we have seen that our elected officials just are not disciplined enough to resist temptation. I'm dispirited that Assembly Speaker Heastie really showed no inclination to go back and strengthen ethics laws during the Silver trial. Now, how, you know, who knows how that's going to change now that that Silver has been convicted. But I thought that it was extremely tone deaf of the speaker to proceed and to make those remarks. How many times have we heard the governor say that he was going to go for ethics reform, and then we just get this milquetoast, watered down press release version of ethics reform? Like, it cannot be like that. And but unfortunately, there are these blips of outrage where everyone is saying it's time, and then the news cycle is such that people lose interest, and it's easy to pull the wool over the public's eyes and to, again, mm-hmm. try to put out something that is woefully inadequate.
Now, when all of this stuff with Silver that came out about his chief of staff, the only Democratic assembly member who was brave enough to talk was Mickey Kearns. I placed a call to Mickey Kearns' office this morning, and hopefully he'll get back to me and share his views on the Silver verdict. And, I think this coming January is going to be very interesting, and the rest of the year will be interesting. Do you think more the legislators are going to be focusing on their reelection or substantive change in Albany?
Look, the legislators are always focused on their reelection. And, I was appalled by what you pointed out, Cynthia, that, Mayor de Blasio's comment about Shelley Silver being a man of integrity, certainly one of the low points of the mayoralty for the de Blasio mayoralty so far. I thought that was just absolutely ridiculous. I was very disappointed with Dick Gottfried, who Assemblyman I very much respect. He also coming forward defending Silver, Deborah Glick defending Silver. These are people, this was just so typical of the blue wall of silence that we see among our elected officials, that, when somebody is accused of a crime that doesn't have political juice behind them, our elected officials are so quick to jump to judgment and prosecute them in the media and show how tough they are. But when it's one of their colleagues, their gut instinct is to whitewash it. And, even another legislator I respect, Michael Blake, was saying today, that there is no culture of corruption in Albany. There's good people up here. I mean, that is just, how many times do we have to hear that same argument about a few bad apples until we realize that the tree is rotten? And our legislators need to be held accountable for that. I was happy to see the Daily News really call out Gottfried and Glick for those comments, because I think that every single time an elected official is convicted of a crime, that the media should print all the positive, glowing, sycophantic quotes from their colleagues who are just falling all over each other to praise, these people who ultimately were shown to be people who are profoundly abusing the public trust. This isn't a victimless crime. We are all victims when there is corruption. And so, the sense that, he was a good man, he just went astray. No. I mean, I think that we've seen that Shelley Silver was in the pocket of real estate interests like Glenwood, and that heavily influenced the way that he negotiated the rent laws. So everybody in New York City was screwed by that type of corruption. You know, that is intolerable. That you know, there is no excusing that type of, you know, abuse of the public trust.
When you say abuse of the public trust and the unwillingness for members to speak out, do you think they are partially, they remember Bragman, what happened to him, and they were fearful to say something?
I mean, you know, a coup to become a leader where it's a self-serving power grab is not the same as speaking out on behalf of the public and being the voice of reason and the voice of truth from the legislature. What I don't understand is among the, for instance, the Democratic Assembly members, how many of them are in just ridiculously safe seats that they could never be defeated either in a general election or in a primary. And why does that not embolden somebody to step up and be the, you know, the Frank Serpico of the assembly and say, look, I am surrounded by a bunch of crooks and liars and self-serving people, and no, I'm going to pull the curtain down. I am going to reveal what is the inner workings here. And fine, you can marginalize me, but, you know, I am going to keep telling the public how it is. And guess what? That person will become an instant superstar in New York State. And this argument that, oh, this will marginalize my district, I won't be able to bring home the bacon, it is quite the contrary, because that person will become so influential in the public discourse. You know, this person will be on Brian Lehrer all the time, speaking to a massive audience, that whoever is that bold assembly person, you know, will be rewarded for their courage, not marginalized. And so I'm appalled that everybody tries to play this game like, oh, I can't come forward and push for ethics reform so stridently in the media, or I can't be calling out my colleagues. I just feel like that is just backwards thinking, and we have seen what is the result of that, which is just incremental progress at best, and most of the time it is woefully inadequate.
You know, you mentioned Frank Serpico, and we all know what happened to him for speaking up and speaking out against, you know, his colleagues. Back in November, he ran for the town board in Stuyvesant, and I thought, oh, he has tremendous name recognition. I thought he was a shoo-in. He ran on the Democratic ticket, and he lost. He lost because that town is predominantly Republican. So if a small town such as Stuyvesant cannot remember the price Serpico paid for speaking the truth and disregarding the fact that he would have done the same thing in the town of Stuyvesant, I think that says something about the people, that the people are not ready to take responsibility to get good members in government that could create change. What do you think?
You know, I mean, I can't speak to the nuance of a tiny municipal election where it was probably decided by 50 votes. But I disagree, Cynthia. I am more optimistic. The sense of, you know, the electorate isn't willing to take responsibility, or the electorate is backward. I mean, I don't think that's the case. What I think is the case is that most people are going about living their lives. And the inordinate amount of time that we spend thinking about these issues it's a fraction of, you know, of importance for people, you know, other who are outside of the political bubble. And I think that, you know, we have alienated the electorate from our politics very deliberately. Our elected officials have done so. And, you know, and people are rightfully fed up with the process and don't want to participate. But were they to scrutinize it the same way that they do the aspects of their life that really matter to them day to day, I think that people would make wise decisions. And, you know, oftentimes the, you know, I mean, this is the same thing we hear about, oh, you know, stupid juries. But, my experience as a juror was that I was really, I felt great affirmation of the jury system when I went into the deliberation room, my fellow jurors, and I saw that these were people who cared, who were thoughtful, who really listened, and I hope that, you know, and I think that that was also a reflection in the Silver trial here. I have greater faith in humanity than you do, Cynthia.
Oh, good. I'm glad you do. So, getting back to what you do at Effective New York, how's things going with the Constitutional Convention?
You know, it's in the people's hands. There's an example of where we're hoping that the people stand up and take the opportunity to re-envision our government. This is, we look so, our founding fathers, we are so steeped in the lore and the power and the extraordinary historic moment of our Constitutional Convention. And this is an opportunity to replicate that in modern day, for us to all put on our founding fathers' wigs, like the Hamilton musical, and for us to be to refound our state. And this is that opportunity, and I'm hopeful that New Yorkers will seize this opportunity. And what is so striking to me is that, you know, on our radio show, Effective Radio with Bill Samuels on AM 970 that we do every Sunday at 11 a.m., you know, we've had a number of guests on recently, both from the left and from the right, who say, you know, in principle, this is a good idea, but I'm afraid of it being co-opted by special interests. And they are quick to point to all the boogeymen who could emerge from the side that they don't like. And to me, that says, you know what, there's something there. If both the left and the right are scared of something, it says that this is probably something that is going to be good for the people who are in the middle. And that's, I'd say, almost all of us. And I do have, you know, it is critical that we elect the right delegates to the Constitutional Convention for it to be as effective as possible. But ultimately, we can nix whatever comes out of the Constitutional Convention by voting it down on the ballot, as we did in 1967 when the people didn't think that those were the right referenda to introduce into the Constitution. So I'm willing to spin the wheel. I'm willing for us to have an extraordinary, robust dialogue about how we can make our state better and to give people that sense of truly being empowered to do something about our government and to not be stymied by a tone-deaf legislature that is working for its own interests instead of ours.
If somebody wants to become involved in preparing for the Constitutional Convention, I mean, this is kind of alien to most people. How could they educate themselves, become involved, and possibly run as a delegate?
Well, the first thing we have to do is we have to vote yes for the Constitution in November 2017. And so, you know, the most important thing that people can do now is to spread the word to their friends and neighbors that a vote is on the horizon, and to explain to them what can be gained from voting yes. But if people would like to learn more about the Constitutional Convention, if they are interested in learning about how they can organize or run for a delegate seat, I would encourage them to call me at 646-706-7175. That's 646-706-7175. And I would be happy to speak with anybody who is enthusiastic about the Constitutional Convention, because this is really the an extraordinary opportunity. I mean, we don't have initiative and referendum in New York State like they do in California, where you can bring something to the ballot and really shift the direction of the state. And it may be very good, but this is our opportunity every 20 years to make our Constitution a living document and to have it be as potent and as germane to the moment as possible.
The last constitutional convention was 67, am I correct?
That's correct.
And so it was voted down twice in the last 40 years.
That's right.
Why was that? Why? Why did the people in the state not want it?
Well, in 1997, all the special interests allied because they all have an interest in maintaining the status quo. When you open up to have a constitutional convention, there is uncertainty. And Albany has an interest in keeping things the same. That's what we see time and again. Change means the possibility that someone's ox will be gored. But Mario Cuomo, who in 1997 was the great champion of the Constitutional Convention, essentially said that unless you think that our government is as good as it could possibly be, then you should support a Constitutional Convention. I think that that is a very wise sentiment. I completely agree with Mario Cuomo on that, and our government can certainly be better, Cynthia.
Well, thank you for taking the time to be on Focus on Albany. And I would like you and Bill to come on at some bit further as you move along. You've been listening to Morgan Pacme from Effective New York. If you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and download on your smartphone and listen anytime, anywhere. Morgan, thank you so much. You have a wonderful day. And thank you, everybody,
thank you,
for listening. Have a good day. Bye.